First, though, let me take you on a journey. In the far west of New South Wales, there's a place most Australians will never see and few have ever heard of. On a private reserve in a shallow depression ringed by low hills is what local Aboriginal leaders call the amphitheatre. On the ground, lying scattered about as if they were abandoned yesterday, are thousands of stone tools, cutting and scraping implements, spearheads, stone knife blades, complete with serrated edges. Onto this land, young men, burais in the local language, are increasingly coming back for ceremonies to mark their passage into adulthood. And that's just one of the secrets held in this spectacular country near Lake Mungo, north of the New South Wales Riverina town of Balranald. Last weekend, I was on this country at the invitation of local Aboriginal elder and lawman Mick Kelly. To come to Lake Mungo in far western New South Wales is to be dwarfed by time. About 20,000 years ago, the Willandra Lakes, of which Mungo is a part, dried up. Before that, for tens of thousands of years, it was a vast freshwater system, cooler than it is now by about 8 degrees, heavily vegetated and heavily populated. It was here in the 1960s and 70s that the remains were found of a man and a young woman. Both had been subject to ritual burial. They had lived and died on the shores of Lake Mungo more than 40,000 years ago. Uncle Mick Kelly, a traditional Yampa lawman, says he's come across other human bones of who knows what antiquity. But he simply reburies them here around Lake Mungo, rather than subject them to the indignities of science. Uncle Mick has invited me and my family to come with him and camp on a vast tract of country just north of Lake Mungo, where he still conducts ceremony for young men. And he starts by taking us to a dry watercourse littered with the remnants of old stone tools. What are you finding just right here, Mick?
Oh, look at this. There's a lot of different sort of artifacts in that here, but at the moment I've just picked up a piece of what we call greenstone that was a part of an axe head that's actually been broken off in the process. So you can see the ground edges on each side to create the axe. So that's off of an axe head about that big. It would have been broken off.
So we're standing in a place that's just absolutely... I find it hard to believe this exists just sitting here. Is an absolute... field full of what they are, Stone Age tools, everywhere you look.
Yeah, no, that's it. And this whole area, you know, what we're seeing on top of the surface is only visible to us here, but this earth mound would probably go down, you know, 1/2 metre or more. So what's underneath, we don't know. And we're not in the business of wanting to run around and dig it up either, so... We're going to try and keep it intact and use it as a teaching tool and bring kids and show them and teach them about culture.
Have you come across old human remains yourself around here?
Oh, I have, but like I said, we don't sort of advertise any of that, and we just sort of do the respectful thing, cover them up and look after them and that. And they just try and keep it pretty low key. Last thing we need is people wanting to run around and look at these sort of things. Like, we don't go running around wanting to look at European graves and things. We're just trying to keep our stuff to ourselves.
So you don't contact a university or an academic from the Western science tradition to come down here and have a look at those sorts of finds?
No, not where we are. You're on Rick Farley. We just want to try and keep it low key. I think there's a little bit too much of that's going on in the past, where, you know, archaeologists have come in and they've taken remains away, and it's meant thousands of years of people being buried in the landscape, and they take them away and then they do their research and they come back and they tell us two or three little dot point things on it, and in the meanwhile they disturb the remains and everything else, and created disharmony really in the communities and that. So yeah, I'm not into doing that sort of thing, and neither are the other fellas in with the corporation that either. So I just want to keep it pretty low key, look after it, and learn from it and respect it.
What do you think non-Indigenous Australians could learn from doing what I'm doing, and that is wandering around in these places trying to understand? We're not talking thousands of years, we're talking thousands of generations.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's about, you know, people getting an understanding of, you know, the timelines from Aboriginal occupation to European occupation in this country. So it's like, you know, grabbing a 10-kilometre ruler and putting a razor blade on and saying, now this is your timeline, that razor blade in that gap. And you've been there this long, so just take a look at that. And there's a lot of stuff people can learn from being out on country and just getting out in Deechern and just respecting, you know, one of the oldest living cultures on earth. And, you know, it still is a living culture, that's it. It's not the stones and bones. Stones and bones, you know, that's they're the evidence of what's been left behind. But we need to start looking at the living culture.
So you have up to 150 boys and young men here at times. Are you really doing what was always done here when you get them together on this land?
Yeah, well, if you're talking about, you know, sharing and caring and sharing knowledge and skills and going through the same practices what was done thousands of years ago, because we, you know, we only got the one law system and the process is all the same right across the whole country, no matter where you go. Some time frames might be a little bit shorter than others, you know, with the contemporary life we sort of live in community and that now. Some people have got the option of going bush for months and months on end and doing the walks and everything else, where some of us, you know, we old jobs and we've got other family life and commitments and everything else, so we have to shorten that up a bit, but we still learn throughout the year and, you know, spread it out a bit more. And then when we come together, we bring it all together, all the knowledge and skills, and that's what ceremony is.
Do you have a sense that interest in this is waning or strengthening?
Nah, it's getting stronger. It's getting stronger and stronger. So each year there's more and more people, you know, young, what we call burais, want to come through and go through manhood and participate in that. And when they go back to their communities, even their people in their community see that there's a big change in them as well. So, and this is something that probably needs to be more and more, but just one of those things you can't throw it out there and advertise it to everyone, otherwise you just get snowed under.
Also with us are Ben and Jasmine Parker and their young kids, Ayla, Levi and Sonny. Ben works for the Victorian Education Department, but is also part of Mick Kelly's Getting On Country program.
How do you feel about standing on ground and feeling your own personal connection back through thousands of generations to a place?
Very funny that you ask that, Jazz. As I was just walking across here with Jazz, she just looked at me and she goes, is your heart full? And it is coming out here, and it's going to sound weird, but coming out here and putting your feet on the dirt, as easy as that is, just sends a great sense of relief right through everything.
I get the impression you feel an enormous privilege to be an Aboriginal man.
Oh, definitely, yes. Very privileged to, you know, I still recognise and celebrate the other parts of my DNA that make me who I am, but certainly very, very proud. I'm part of the oldest living culture, one of the oldest living cultures in the world. I have the opportunity to learn about stuff that, you know, others not necessarily be able to get that, but being able to take it in and then share it and keep that and continue that journey on with my kids and hopefully with their kids and so on and so forth. So, yeah, it's very humbling and it's nice. It's lovely.
At night, Uncle Mick Kelly leads us through a ceremony relating to the Malleefowl dreaming. It's a small taste of what gets taught here, sometimes to groups of up to 150 young men, but more usually to smaller groups of less than a dozen. So, Uncle Mick, you gave us a taste last night, just a tiny taste of the Malleefowl dreaming. It's a pretty profound experience, I think, for everyone who was there. You didn't want it recorded in any way. Why is that?
You know, we want these experiences to be personal experiences, not something that's splashed all over YouTube and then people start looking at it and say, yeah, I've seen that and I've done that. They completely miss the point of the immerseness of yourself within that story at night, watching it, you know, under the firelight and being a part of it, and especially participating in the first part of it, which is creating that ground art, coming out of the ground and then being a part of the big picture, so to speak. So if we turn around and put all that on YouTube, you know, people will think that's the way you get culture. That's the way culture is now. You look at it all on YouTube and that, but they're missing the key point of being out on country, the sights, the sounds, the smell, and the feeling of being out there and immersed within that is something you can't get from YouTube.
Do you think it would surprise people to know how much ceremony still goes on in Australia?
Oh, yeah. Look, I used to get tired of hearing people talking in circles and communities saying, oh, you know, ceremony doesn't happen no more, that's all forgotten. And especially in New South Wales, it always go on that, you know, the last ceremony was in 1936 just because this thing was written in a book. What they don't understand, and this thing has never ever ceased. It's always continued. It's happened very secretively, behind closed doors, so to speak. People went away and they still participated in it. It was like having a fire going. You never let the fire go out. So, you know, when they were told they had to stop all their practices and everything else, you know, old people could see that the fire was starting to die down. So what they'd do, they'd go and grab those few boys and that, and they'd bring them and they'd put them through law and put them through ceremony. It was just like putting another little bit of wood on the fire to keep that alive, those traditions and that, all alive, the ceremony. It never stopped.
What would you like young Aboriginal men, because you deal mainly with young men, what would you like them, those in the towns, maybe those a little bit struggling with their identity, what would you like them to know?
Just who they are as an individual, you know, and where they fit within society, especially in an Aboriginal society. If they can take that time out to sit down with, you know, uncle and aunt and nan and pop and that, and start to talk about the old days and who their families were and where they were living and, you know, what they'd done for a living, that can help them with their true identity on who they really are. And if they're not really sure about it, or nan and pop may not be sure about it because, you know, they never got taught, because that their parents might have, you know, would have been living in fear of them being taken away if they were talking in language or doing songs and dance or something like that. So if they don't understand that, there's other people out there in the communities who know where people come from. So just communication. Everyone needs to start sitting down and talking.
What about the rest of Australia, broadly speaking, multicultural, multi-ethnic, migrant Australia, white Australia? What would you like them to know?
Yeah, look, I keep saying we need to stop the pigment politics in this country and stop looking at everyone else's colour and everything and associating colour with issues within the communities and that, and start moving forward past that. And everyone needs to start sitting down and having the conversation. You know, we're all in this together here. You know, what can we do to help each other? Like we keep saying, why aren't the government sitting down with our people, quiet on country, and listen to our concerns and our aspirations and everything else that we want to deal with? Let us fix some of our problems in our communities. We got the answers and the tools to do it, but we just don't have the backing and support. People say, oh, you shouldn't be paid to go and participate in your culture and that. Well, how do you keep it alive? It's not as if we don't just go and say, look at the opera house and make it put it on the World Heritage stage and say we're not allowed to maintain that no more, that culture and heritage. You know, just let it fall down and go to rack and ruin it. Got to remember, our culture is a living culture. It's not a static culture. It's not stones and bones. It's well beyond that. And, you know, if we can maintain it and keep it strong, it's going to be there for the next few thousands of generations to come.
Uncle Mick Kelly, it's been a great privilege to be with you on country. Thank you.
Thank you, you.
Tremendous time there with Mick Kelly and Ben Parker just north of Lake Mungo last week. Hugh Rimmington with you on RN.